Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the city, Portland, Oregon, that is responsible for my pro wrestling fandom. It's Saturday Morning Wrestling from Portland, Oregon, brought to you by Tom Peterson, 82nd and Southeast Foster Road, and Friendly Chevrolet, the friendly place to buy. I'm your host, Jim Valley. Sit back, buckle in for 90 minutes of the greatest in professional wrestling today. That's sort of the way, kind of sort of sounded like the way they introduced Portland wrestling back in the day. Now, if you grew up in the territory days, you know, that's what you had. You had the local announcer introducing your wrestling show, and then they'd always have, you know, the low-rent sponsors. And it's funny, Tom Peterson was a legend here in Portland. He's actually still alive, and he was one of those people who, you know, I guess you have him a little bit. I don't know that you have him so much anymore, but he'd always have, like, the not really crazy commercials, but kind of crazy commercials. Like, he'd pretend to knock on the TV screen and go, "Wake up! Wake up!" And that's something people still talk about today. And he had this Marine haircut, the flat-top Marine haircut. And sometimes, as far as he'd have, like, special sales or whatever, and one of the things he would do is offer free Tom Peterson haircuts. And, he sold, like, grandparents' furniture, you know, for your mobile home. Actually, today, where his old store is, I think it's like a rent-a-center or one of those rent-to-buy places, which I guess would be the modern-day equivalent of Tom Peterson. But he sponsored it every year forever. I think Tom is still alive. God, he's got to be 90s, I would think. He's got to be pretty old. But he's still alive. He's in a care center now. But not that long ago, I think Portland TV did a thing on him. Some sort of personality piece on him, but he's still with us, which is good. But, oh yeah, Tom Peterson is a legend. And I'm sure, just like, you know, Bob Luce in Chicago or whatever, there's always those legendary, you know, store owners or pitchmen or whomever that did the local commercials that are just legendary in your town where you live. And, you know, Tom would go to the matches sometimes and do his commercials live on Portland Wrestling, and oh yeah, he's a big, big deal, and that's just one of those things that it's just not around anymore, but oh well. But yeah, here I am. I'm on location today in Portland, Oregon, beautiful Portland, Oregon, ruined by the hipsters, but what are you going to do? But this is the city that I was watching TV from, where we first fell in love with Portland Wrestling, which, you know, turned me into white trash and made me the loser that I am today. So that's very, very exciting. So we're back for Saturday Morning Wrestling. If you're new to the program, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. A lot of people have been talking about it and tweeting about it. The numbers, gosh, the numbers have been great. Matter of fact, earlier this week I was talking with Bruce Mitchell, and he was like, you know, your show is just, you know, it's impressive. The numbers are, you know, he was just impressed with how well it's doing. And if Bruce Mitchell is going to say something nice, that's got to be fairly begrudging. So that's got to be something good. So this is the show where we throw away the analysis. We don't micromanage everything and overanalyze everything. We leave that to during the week. And here we just wallow in our wrestling nerddom. And we talk about the days when it was real to us, darn it. When we'd grab a bowl of sugar cereal pull up to the TV, probably even actually have to dial it by hand even, or only had 50 or so channels on the dial, and turn on Superstars or World Class or Memphis or Florida or whatever you watched as a kid. This is what we celebrate here. We talk about the past and all the stuff that we love, because, you know, there's enough analysis during the week. There's more than enough analysis. And if you're not getting enough, then you need to be, you know, a VIP member for PW Torch. You can go to pwtorch.com/govip and find out all about that, to get all of the news that is could possibly be reported in professional wrestling, and just a ridiculous amount of audio. I mean, you would have to be homeless to listen to all of the audio that is supplied each and every week and every month here at the Torch. So sign up. I know that Wade has got a sale on right now. You can find out about that on his Twitter. And you can sign up. There's a special WrestleMania sale. So it's like 78% off or something like that. So good time to be a member to the Torch. Plus, you get me and the Saturday Morning Wrestling every Saturday, 8:30 Pacific, 11:30 Eastern in the United States. So a couple of things I've been thinking about. You know, it's interesting. Here in Portland, we have the Portland Sports Arena, which I went to a couple of times as a kid. You know, we lived about 90 miles north of Portland growing up, and so we didn't always go to the matches in Portland. We'd wait to see them at our local high schools. But a few times I got to go to the Portland Sports Arena, and it was quite the eye-opener because it was an old bowling alley. And so the ceilings were really low. I don't know if you see on YouTube clips of Portland wrestling. You can see that, whoever stands up on the top rope, they're practically touching the ceiling. You know, there isn't much room. And I know at times there were, in the history of Portland wrestling, there were, you know, Dutch Savage took like a backdrop and kicked one of the lights out. Things like that were known to happen. Not all the time, you know, on the rare occasion, but still it was pretty low ceiling. And it was, you know, it was sort of very much like your bowling alley, where you would walk in and there'd be the concessions and all of those things, and then you'd step down, you know, like you would in a bowling alley, go down to the lanes, but you'd step down to go down to the arena area where the ring was. And it was just the funniest freaking looking place for a place for wrestling, which is, I don't know. Of course, a lot of famous arenas are really kind of run down. Like, of course, the world-famous Sportatorium. I mean, that place was a dump in an industrial area. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, with the exception of actual real arenas like Madison Square Garden, anything that was specifically for wrestling was pretty low rent, and that's just the reality of the situation. And I remember it kind of blew my mind as a young fan. Because, you know, you see on TV and it's really glamorous and you think it's really cool. Then you go there and you're like, oh, wow, this place is really dingy. And it was just, it blew my little young mind. So I don't know if you have any experiences going to live shows or that kind of thing. But if you do, you can call in at 646-721-9828. Also, you can email at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com, or you can find me on the Twitter at Jim Valley, so you can tweet me there so you can interact with the show as we do this. And it's much better as a live show because I like the call, so be sure to call in and contribute. Whatever your white trash pro wrestling memories are, remember, you don't have to be white to be white trash. So keep that in mind. We're all the same ilk here. We're all losers who wasted too much time watching the pro wrestling. So all righty then. Well, let's go to our first phone call of the day. It's area code 434. 434, you are on the live cast. It's Saturday Morning Wrestling with Jim Valley. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hey, Jim Valley. It's Johnny from Virginia, a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Johnny from Virginia. Are you calling from the Jefferson Theater, Johnny?
There is no Jefferson Theater in Virginia. I am not Jim Valley, who is secretly in Portland, Oregon, about to go see Billy Mitchell at the Wizard World Comic Con, courtesy of my free tickets.
Well, I'm just going because Dan Thunder D's wife didn't want to go.
I know, and I'm about to call and tell them that they only need two tickets instead of three.
Well, I thought there were only two tickets. I thought that's why I was going, because there was only two tickets and Gina doesn't want to go.
No, it's you, Chots, and Thunder D.
Oh, I didn't know Chots was going. Okay, Thunder D didn't tell me that.
Well, that's like Thunder D, so there you go.
Yeah, I know. I'm very excited to be harassed and mocked and ignored and all that stuff. I'm really looking forward to today. It should be fun.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm looking forward to I've never been to a Comic-Con before, so yeah, this should be fun here in Portland. Yesterday, the WWE guys were there. I think they had Roman Reigns and Paige and the New Day, but I'm not that I would have waited in line to see them anyway, because...
You guys have VIP. You'll have Thunder D. The guy that runs Wizard World is going to take you guys straight to meet Billy Mitchell, so you don't have to wait in line.
You think Billy Mitchell, by the way, for people who don't know, he's the bad guy from the King of Kong movie, with all the quarters, you know, where they play Donkey Kong.
He is the greatest bad guy of all time. Like, they interview him, and he's just like, I'm controversial, like the abortion issue. And I'm like, no, no, you're not. I think he's so oblivious to you know, what a douchebag he is. I think he's amazing. So.
I don't think he's oblivious to it at all, but it's funny because the guy, Steve Wiebe, who was the hero in that movie, the baby face in that movie, and let's be honest, that movie is pro wrestling.
Yes. I think it's the greatest pro wrestling movie ever made.
It may be the greatest pro wrestling movie ever made. The guy, Steve Wiebe, he lives up by me, as a matter of fact. I've interviewed him a number of times, and my wife actually worked with his wife for a time. So, yeah, we know the Wiebes. So. But let's talk about that for a second. You know, the King of Kong, the Donkey Kong documentary from 10 years ago, I think, probably something like that now. Is pro wrestling, because you have the babyface, the underdog, Steve Wiebe, who worked so hard to try to get the record, and you've got the heel, the Triple H type character, Billy Mitchell, who is the number one guy, and all the nerds worship him, and he's been number one for so long, and you know, Steve Wiebe even has the Twin Galaxy people against him and saying his name wrong and making him go through all of these extra steps, which it seems to protect Billy Mitchell. And then finally he wins, and, you know, it's very much a pro wrestling story. It's totally pro wrestling.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, I mean, it's a very one-sided account of everything that went down and all that, but hey, you can tell, I mean, you know, watch Making a Murderer, you know, like you watch Making a Murderer, you're like, wow, Steve Avery didn't do it. And then, you know, you read, you know, three more sentences that they didn't include in the movie. You're like, oh, wow, he definitely killed her.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I knew that the King of Kong was definitely a documentary, definitely designed to get you those emotions, for you to vote that way. But yeah, it's definitely pro wrestling.
So getting back to your original theme of today, I have an early arena as well. I mean, I grew up in Danville, Virginia, which is 45 minutes from the Greensboro Coliseum. So I used to go there, and that's a nicer place. And then a few times I went to the Dorton Arena, which is horrible. It's one of the, I mean, it's really unique looking from the outside, but it's a horrible venue. And then we occasionally have some spot shows in Danville, Virginia, at our downtown auditorium, and that place was a crap hole. But going a little later in my wrestling watching, I for lack of a better term, I was dating a girl, and we were living in Maryland. And we went to Baltimore to the aquarium, and it was like around like 3:34 o'clock, and they said no more passes to go to the aquarium. You know, like they cut it off. So I was like, I asked her, I was like, how far is Philly from here? And she was like, I don't think it's that far. I had memorized the number for the ECW merchandise hotline, whatever, the 1-800 number. I'd seen the show so many times. It was, you know, just like the WCW, you know, 1-900-909-9900. I mean, it's just some things you just don't forget. And at the time, I remembered the ECW number. So I called, and they're like, you know, tonight, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, my God, tonight is Raven's last match in ECW. So and he would leave there and go and, you know, go to WCW for the first time, then, you know, then later come back, whatever. So we drive up, and there's a huge wreck on 95, and there's people going, I think, for a baseball game. There's a Phillies game going at the same time. Dave Matthews is in concert at the same time, and then the ECW arena. I don't think that led to a lot of this traffic. Anyway, there's like a turned over tractor trailer truck and all that, so we're just stuck. And so there's hippies walking along the interstate, you know, just talking to people, high five customers. I mean, we're not moving, and when we do move, it's, you know, like 1 mile an hour. So anyway, this is my younger days, and so I asked the guy walking by, do you have any marijuana? And he says yes. So he runs back to his truck, comes back, and sells me marijuana. And so we're stuck. So we get there just as the show is about to start. There's still a line to ECW Arena, which is a converted bingo hall. So we're in line for about 30 minutes, and I was just like, this is so awesome. I can't wait. I can't believe I'm going to see ECW. This is great, blah, blah, blah. So we get – I'm not paying attention to the actual entry. So we're about two people away, and I actually look, and I see that there's police officers – frisking you as you go in. And I look at my girlfriend at the time, and I was just like, I'm going to jail. And she was like, what do you mean? I'm like, I have marijuana in my pocket. And she was like, oh no. And I'm like, oh no. And it's too late to leave. I mean, like, you know, he's like, you're next. So anyways, I was like, hey, he's like, empty your pockets. I was like, oh. So I pull out, and he's just like, that's it? I was like, yeah. He goes, no weapons? And I was like, no. He goes, put that back in your pocket. And I was like, the ECW is a very different place than anywhere I've ever watched wrestling before. So, then, you know, that night it was crazy. You know, Raven finally lost to Tommy Dreamer. The lights go out. Jerry Lawler shows up. It's craziness. So after the show, we're hanging out. And in between the ring and the barricade is covered. I mean, absolutely covered in blood. I mean, everyone bled this night. So there's a few fans hanging out, and this one fan goes, man, that's fake blood there. That's all fake blood. And this other guy dips his finger in it and licks it. He goes, nope, that's real.
Gross.
I was like, well, there, mystery solved.
Oh my God.
That was my first night at the.
Why would you touch those guys? Did the guy get a contact high from whoever blood that was?
Balls and Axel were on the show.
So he's dead. Is what you're saying. That guy died instantly?
Yeah. No, I saw him leave the building. I don't know how much further he made it, how many more steps, but I saw him actually leave the exit.
Good Lord. That's so funny. Yeah, the ECW arena, isn't it like under, like, it looks like it's under like a like an overpass or something.
It's beside an overpass. It's right.
Okay.
I mean, it's full of, I mean, it was a lot smaller than I thought it'd be. I mean, like, he packed them in pretty tight there. And I met the guy with the straw hat and the Hawaiian shirt. And, like, you know, I was so happy because I had seen him on every episode, front row. And so I'm in line to buy beer. And I was just like, yeah, this should be pretty good. He goes, you never know what's going to happen. And I was like, oh, my God, this guy is a little special. So I think he was a true believer.
God, yeah. I remember the in Beyond the Mat where Barry Blaustein says that no one scared him more than the fans at ECW. You think?
Yeah, yeah. No, they were they were all in. So, but I mean, it was one of my favorite memories. I mean, like, I went to that show, and it was, you know, it sucks. I ended up going to, like, two more shows, and one of the last shows I went to was, like, RVD versus Skull Von Crush, who later became Big Vito. And I'm sitting there with the same girlfriend, and I'm just like, this is the beginning of the end. This is not good.
Wow, I can't believe that girlfriend didn't leave you after the first ECW show. So was that Liz?
Yeah, that was Liz. Oh no,
God,
a different Liz. It was a Liz before that Liz. Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, when I went to the first time I went to the Portland Sports Arena, you know, we've probably all seen a cartoon that someone makes fun of comb overs where it's like the beard is like used as a comb over. I literally saw that at the Portland Sports Arena in real life. Not a joke.
Wow.
The guy had. Yeah, it was like. What it made Trump's comb over look like garbage because it was such an amazing structure and such an amazing job at combing it, and just it was brilliant. But yeah, he'd literally grown out his beard as a comb over. It blew my young mind. Hey, real quick, I want to mention, if you're on hold and you want to get on, be sure to push the 1 button so I know that you want to talk, because I think there's some people that want to talk, but they haven't alerted me. There we go. There it is.
Real quick before I go, Jim.
Yeah.
I know you don't like to talk too much modern stuff, and it's a modern question, but it's relating back to previous stuff. I'm an informed voter. I base my my presidential vote on the number of WrestleMania appearances. Do you think that's a fair way to pick the next leader of our nation?
Absolutely, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think you should vote for anybody who's ever sat front row at a WrestleMania, and that's why I fully support your vote for Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, wow. I'm not sure if she's alive, but...
I think she is. She just looks like the Joker.
Okay. Well, I did mention that I am an informed voter. So there
you
go. Go Trump.
All right, there's Johnny. Have a good day. Thanks for the tickets. And, well, at least thank you for getting the tickets. I don't know that I appreciate the company. Although, Chops is
there
probably a cool guy. We'll see.
Exactly.
All
enjoy.
Right, take it easy. There's Johnny Fairplay dialing up and telling his stories at 646-721-9828. 646-721-9828 is the number. We're just talking wrestling here today on the Saturday Morning Wrestling Show here on the PW Torch livecast. And don't forget, you can, if you're going to do shopping through Amazon, you can support a small business by going to pwtorch.com/Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't do anything as far as you're concerned. All it does is just help the Torch and Wade feed his family and help Bowie to someday go to a good college, perhaps. You never know. He'll probably end up being a gopher, right? He'll go to the University of Minnesota? Probably, I would think so, but you never know. Alrighty, so you can email at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Also, you can find me on the Twitter at Jim Valley, or call up at 646-721-9828, 646-721-9828. We are live here on Saturday Morning Wrestling on the PW Torch Livecast. All right, we got a VIP caller. Let's go to Dominic in Pittsburgh. Dominic, what's going on, man?
Hey, Jim, how are you, man?
I'm good. I can't complain. I'm here in beautiful Portland, Oregon. I'm about to go to the Comic-Con where I'm going to wait in ridiculous lines and see all the other nerds who like other nerd things wander around. But
I did that too in Philly. So we had
that?
The Wizard World. It was nuts. It's like it's pretty cool because like just all the stands and everything that's set up. But you're right about the lines, man. If you don't get there soon enough, you're gonna be waiting for a while. It's because
yeah.
I went and but you know what? That being said, they go relatively fast. But it's like a cattle thing, pretty much. Like you're just lined up and yeah. Like I went and met Sting, and it was just like real quick. I shook his hand. He was like, "Hey, how are you?" Quick picture. That was it. Same with Burt Reynolds. I did that with my girlfriend. And then we got cycled on through, but it was a neat experience just being there and like experiencing that, just seeing all these people dressed up, and it's people dig it. You get into it too. The first time I went the first day and like just paid one day ticket, and then it was going on for like three more days, and I paid for like two more days to go after that. So I really liked it. Yeah,
well,
I think you'll like it, man. It's good.
There's enough to do there for 3 days.
Probably not. you might be over it by the time you have the you're over and done with it. My buddies made it a much more enjoyable experience for me. Like than like if I was just going by myself, or like you know I just had some plans set out. Then yeah, one day I'm sure going to be plenty filled for you. But they hooked me line and sinker, you know.
I was going through the list of people, which and it seemed like everybody was from the show Arrow. It just seemed like a big Arrow
convention.
Oh, God,
yeah.
And I was
really?
That show is that huge?
That's the hot thing, man. Yeah, that's people love it. I mean, I know Travis Bryant, and he watches it like with The Flash and all that stuff, too. And, that's the big thing. And then Lou Ferrigno's at everyone, it seems, too. Lou Ferrigno's always there.
Oh, yeah, he's in every... I think it's a law. You've got to have Lou Ferrigno. Did you say Burt Reynolds? Is that who you saw?
Yeah, he was the best one, too. I mean, he doesn't look... Like, God bless him, he doesn't look very good anymore, but, you know...
Well, he just turned 80 this week.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah, and, like, he came out on... Like, he was using a cane, and, like, you know, you could tell he was happy to be there, but, you know, he was tired by the time, like... You know, he was dealing with all these people, and then he had a question-and-answer session after that, which was really cool. And, like, so I got to ask him about a couple movies and his directing experience and stuff, and he was really nice and genuine and still had, like, the Burt Reynolds sense of humor kind of deal. So, you know,
they
it was cool.
How does the toupee look? How does the toupee look these days?
It looks better than what it did, like, the early 90s, I would say. it kind of fit into him a little bit more, I would say. But...
It looked like pubic hair back in the day for a time. So, yeah.
Right.
Anyway. All right.
That
we'll
being said,
people...
you get my presidential vote for WrestleMania appearances. He'd be my vote.
That's true. He did do a good job. You're right. I forgot
right.
about that. Burt was at WrestleMania 10. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh. We should talk about that. Celebrities at celebrities in wrestling or celebrities at WrestleMania. But anyway, so you wanted to talk about, was it Jay Youngblood?
Yeah, like I kind of wanted a little bit of a background on him because I remember listening to like some Bruce Mitchell audios and like he would, and I didn't know anything about Jay Youngblood and I still really, really don't pretty much. But I like his name, and I like the fact that he teamed with Ricky Steamboat, you know, and they had a really good tag team. And I kind of wanted a little more, like, insight on him and, like, what I should look for on the network in regards to watching some of his matches, if there's anything, you know?
Yeah, there probably isn't too much. Probably most of the Jay Youngblood you're going to see on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, the most famous thing he ever did was his match with, or his tag team with Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
And the matches they had with Sergeant Slaughter and Don Pernoodle, which led to Starrcade. But Steamboat is a second-generation wrestler. Or Steamboat, sorry. Youngblood is a second-generation wrestler. His dad in Texas and the Southwest was Ricky Romero.
Oh, okay.
And Ricky... Yeah. So it's the Romero family.
Oh,
and
no way.
So Rick,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. His real name is Romero.
Wow. How about that?
I don't know how he got the name, where he got the name Youngblood and how we got the name Youngblood. I don't know that. You know, probably, you know, someone decided that he looked Indian rather than Hispanic and decided right. that, you know, it was probably something like that. I don't know. If someone does know, maybe Bruce knows, but I don't. But then he was, you know, the Indian star, Jay Youngblood. And that was not uncommon. We had what was the guy's name? We had an undercard guy here in Portland in the mid-'80s. Like, he was like, there was Billy Two Eagles, and Billy is a really nice guy, and I know Billy was him, but there was another guy like Billy White Eagle or Billy Two Rivers or one of those names that harkens back to the past. And they did an interview with him one time. It's on YouTube. You can find it on YouTube. But he was like a really muscular guy, kind of short, but really muscular, you know. And he does the interview. He's an Indian. He's supposed to be an Indian, but he's got this super strong Hispanic Mexican accent. And it's just, it really kind of blows the gimmick when he's talking with the heavy Mexican accent. And he's, you know, Billy, you know, Power Eagle or whatever his name was. I don't even remember. I don't know that he might. I think he might have wrestled in Mid-South too, but he never really did anything or win anywhere. But yeah, so it wasn't unusual. You know, Chief J. Strongbow. There's another.
Yeah.
So wrestling is filled with fake Native Americans.
Right, because like Chief J. Strongbow, he was like Italian or something, wasn't he?
yeah, Joe Scarpa. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that? Well, I mean, let's face it. You know, you can go the other way. I mean, can you imagine today? This is what I want to talk about on the show. Is you know, you really couldn't get away with that today, because it would be considered, you know, a hate crime or racially insensitive. And I'm not saying that it isn't or it's not, but I'm just saying that's what would happen today. I'm just drawing
right.
a comparison between the two eras. I'm not, you know, I'm not mocking anyone or anything.
No,
but,
no, and it's bad
know,
enough, like, that the El Matadors, you know, they're Puerto Rican, and it's like, come on. Let's
How bad, I mean, how protested if Scott Hall came out as Razor Ramon today? There would be just incredible outrage. Just, you know, look at him talking with that accent. You know, WWF thinks all Mexicans are all Cubans or whatever, or drug dealers, and da 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 da. Oh, yeah, it would be, you know, someone would be, think of the children.
Right.
Well,
I bought into that too as a kid. Like, you know, I was gonna mention my Mount Rushmore of wrestling too, because Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant, they used to do that on their show. Like, people call him, they'd be like, "Who's on your Mount Rushmore?" And Scott Hall,
yeah.
Razor Ramon was like number one out of all of them for me. You know, because I remember watching it like '95 and seeing him like as Razor Ramon and being like, "That guy is cool." You know, that guy's, you know. And seeing, like, my dad was all into him. He's like, "Hey, that guy, I dig his style." And I was like, "Yeah, I do too." And so he got me. I mean, Hulk Hogan obviously is another one. And then I guess Bruno Sammartino would be the other one, because my dad grew up watching Bruno. And, like, my great-grandfather grew up watching, well, was, you know, screaming at the television in Italian at Bruno and stuff. So I would put him there. And then I guess The Rock would round off my number four. But, yeah, Razor Ramon, like, with him with his yeah, I totally believed it. I totally believed he was Hispanic. So,
really? You did? Because he talked so slow. Hey, Chico. I was just like, oh, my gosh. Let's get back to Youngblood for a second. So Youngblood was a second-generation wrestler. His dad was really, really popular in the Southeast and in Texas. And matter of fact, you know, Jay wrestled here in Portland he did two tours of duty in the late 70s and then the early 80s. And a lot of times, I think each time what happened was he was wrestling in the Mid-Atlantic and he got, quote-unquote, injured, and then he would come here to Portland to wrestle. And that's what you could do back then, because he didn't really know that, you know, Jay Youngblood wasn't actually injured, that he was, you know, just working somewhere else. And he would work here for a little while and then go back to Crockett. But So Jay had the tag team with Ricky Steamboat, which is probably, you know, and he won some singles titles. I think he was Mid-Atlantic champion, and I know that he was, you know, the Pacific Northwest champion, and I think he held some other regional titles. But so with the tag team, I think it's on YouTube. You can find the whole series, and if you want to see probably the best stuff that, you know, the most historical stuff that Jay Youngblood's responsible for, it's called The Road to Greensboro on YouTube, and it's this whole thing. It probably lasts, you know, it's a bunch of different clips, but it probably lasts, I don't know, maybe an hour-ish, and it covers all of the angles that they did with the feud with Don Kernoodle and Sergeant Slaughter against Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, and it shows how they injure everyone, and it's such a great roller coaster ride. It really makes you see what they don't do today. It seems like, you know, everything is three matches, you know, over 3 months, where one guy wins one, the other guy wins one, and then finally the guy who's higher on the food chain finally wins and it's over. And it's, but this one has so many twists and turns. If you watch it on YouTube, it's very entertaining, and it's great. I go back and watch it maybe, I don't know, once a year or so. But what happened was, is eventually they built up to the big cage match, and they had, much like the first Starrcade, the traffic was so bad that it was backed up for miles to see this blow-off in the cage between Slaughter and Kernoodle and Youngblood and Steamboat. That's where they got the idea to do the first Starrcade. They were like, we can build up to a major show, and then later that year, they did Starrcade 83.
Oh, man.
So that's probably the significance of Jay Youngblood. The other thing Jay Youngblood did, if you read Hacksaw Jim Duggan's book, is he introduced Duggan to his wife.
Whoa. How about that? That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. and I didn't know that either, but before he died, Youngblood was starting in Mid-South. He did a couple of early matches in Mid-South for Watts. But, you know, I think he was a drug guy, and he, you know, you could kind of tell by his body that he didn't work out a lot and didn't do those things. And, you know, he died of a heart attack in, what was it, 84? Is that what it was? I think it was. I think it's, you know, 84, 85, something like that. And then, you know, his brothers tried to carry on the legacy of things, but, you know, just wrestling kind of changed, and that's, you know, they did okay in, like, some territories and stuff, and,
Man.
Oh, I'm just reading this tweet I got from somebody saying that, pretty sure when he was a little kid that Youngblood came into the NWA as Wahoo's cousin or nephew. That wouldn't surprise
really?
Me. That wouldn't. Well, I mean, you know, that was always the gimmick. That, I mean, geez, how many cousins are there in professional wrestling? It's, you know, Ric Flair was the Anderson's cousin, and you know, Rick Steamboat was the son of Sammy Steamboat. And they always had that lineage that they always tried to do in professional wrestling, that everyone seemed to be cousins and uncles.
Yeah, that's Lance Von Erich or whatever, too.
Lance Von Erich wrestled here in Portland, too, before he went to Dallas as Ricky Vaughn.
Oh, how about that? Jeez. Well, no, when you mentioned the story arc went with Youngblood and Steamboat and, like, Sergeant Slaughter, and that's, like, it really reminded me, because, like, the network introduced me to the world classic champion, well, the Von Erich wrestling, you know, and seeing the whole Freebird and Von Erich storyline develop on that was so cool, like, seeing that develop week after week until cut it off at, like, the mid-80s something like that, so... But no, so I'm gonna have to check that out because, it definitely gets me amped up for seeing stories develop like that.
Check out the YouTube. Yeah, The Road to Greensboro. I'm pretty sure is what it's called, and it's on YouTube. And like I said, it's a bunch of different clips. It's probably about 20 or so different clips on YouTube that with different lengths and everything that show the Mid-Atlantic, and it's still pretty entertaining today. And it was a big deal. Those world, you know, it's amazing how world tag team championships used to be a big deal, and that's one of the things I don't understand now. It's like, if I'm a promoter, I'd want to maximize everything I have, and I don't know why the WWE doesn't do that anymore, because you'd think that way you could run different nights with different titles and different people on top and maximize your money and your profits, but I don't know.
Right, you don't have to rely on Roman Reigns or Dean Ambrose or anybody like that week after week, and that's kind of what's fresh about NXT. Granted, they only have an hour, but, I mean, they switch things in and out. You don't see, like, you don't see Finn Balor every week sometimes, or you don't see Samoa Joe or anything. It's like they have a little leeway. A tag team's main event. It's just, that's how it should be done, and if WWE can figure out a way to do it within a span of 3 hours, that'd be awesome. But but cool,
that's
man.
Amazing.
No, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, I was at the ECW arena the past couple of years, and the best event I've ever went to was Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore on November of 2014, and you know, it was cool. Like he knew how to book a show, and like that's the one where Del Rio like magically appeared after he got fired from WWE. And
So,
by all means, that was the best. I've been to Raw, I've been to WrestleMania, I've been to like ROH events, and no doubt Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore was great. So. Keep with the live event team.
Sweet. All right, man. Well, I appreciate the call, Dominic. Thanks so much.
Yeah. No, thanks, Jim. Have a good one, man.
You bet. Call in any time. There's a Dominic calling in from, what did you say, Pittsburgh? Is that where it is? Yes, Dominic from Pittsburgh. He's calling in at 646-721-9828. By the way, we got people I see on hold. If you want to talk, if you want to be on the, don't forget to hit the number one button. So let me in. Jeez, Louis, I'm still sick. What the hell's wrong? So I'm doing the show live from Portland, Oregon today, down here with my wife who's going shopping with some friends, and then I'm going to be hitting the Wizard World. God, what a great gimmick that is. Comic-Cons and everything. The cons are such big business now. It's just amazing. I'm excited to see all the cosplay, too. How about all the wrestling cosplay? Like a couple of weeks ago, those guys who were in Raw, dressed up like Macho Man and Undertaker, and was there Gold Dust and there Hulk Hogan and everything? Good Lord. Just amazing. So Dominic was asking about the Mount Rushmore of wrestling and his favorites. I think a couple of people who could conceivably be on any Mount Rushmore of wrestling were born today, celebrating birthdays today, New Japan founder and Japanese legend Antonio Inoki, the Chin. He's 72 years old today. Of course, he's probably also known for the match with Muhammad Ali in 1976, where he laid on the ground and tried kicking Ali, and it was a big disaster. Antonio Inoki, what a worker. What a guy. Also, on this day today, who would have been 94 years old today, the Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers, the original Nature Boy. To a nicer guy, it could never happen. I love Buddy Rogers. The more I watch with Buddy Rogers, I'm just like, God, that guy is so great. He was amazing. If you can see any of his stuff on YouTube, you can see how he was really, really, really ahead of his time. As far as the showmanship aspect and to carry himself like a star. You know, he was, for the longest time, for 20-some years, maybe even longer, I guess, yeah, about the time, 20, 30 years, he was the only guy to hold both the NWA and the World Wrestling Federation Championship, which was pretty amazing. And he died, what, in 93, something like that. But, Buddy Rogers would have been 94 years old today. Also on this day in 1978, Bob Backlund defeated Billy Graham to win the Worldwide Wrestling Federation Championship. And if you haven't read Bob Backlund's book, it's pretty great. So if you get a chance to read Bob Backlund's book, it's pretty interesting. He goes through each feud, like month by month by month. And it's pretty great as far as how he rates people and what he remembers, and it's very specific. It's definitely worth checking out. Also, on this day in history, something we were talking about, world-class wrestling in the Von Erichs. It was on this day in 1986 that world-class left the NWA and pronounced Ravishing Rick Rude, who was the American heavyweight champion at the time, to be the first world-class wrestling world heavyweight champion. Now, the kayfabe reason was that World Class was not happy that the disqualification rule in the NWA, because all of the Von Erichs would always, you know, almost win the world title, of course, in a kayfabe sense. And then what would happen is that the champion, that dastardly Ric Flair, Harley Race, would get himself disqualified, and then the Von Erichs then couldn't win the title. So the rule for World Class was that a title could change hands on through a disqualification. The real reason was that Ric Flair was tied up with Crockett a lot, and Fritz couldn't get a lot of dates on the world champion. And, you know, in that era now, because Crockett was pretty much controlling the belt, that the Von Erichs and Von Erich boys were never going to get a run with the world championship. I mean, the NWA was falling apart at that point. So, you know, those were the real reasons. But yeah, on this date, that World Class left the NWA, and, you know, that's another thing. It's like the success of World Class in that Freebird era. Yeah, it was the Freebirds and the Von Erichs, but it was also, you know, the dream of one of the Von Erich boys winning, you know, the World Heavyweight Championship, which they achieved with Kerry, but I think also people expected, you know, that David might have got a run or something like that. Not that was going to happen, but oh well. Also, on this date in 1989, if you're a VIP member for the Torch, there's Bruce Mitchell and there's Todd Martin and the Wade Keller, of course, James Caldwell, and just a ton of audio, Pat McNeil. Well, Pat McNeil and I do a show where we watch something live on the WWE Network, and it's like a director's commentary where you can turn it on and watch it with us at the same time. And the show we're watching right now is Chi-Town Rumble, which happened on this day in 1989. That's where Rick Steamboat beat Ric Flair to win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And we're watching that show right now, and I think we're coming up on the Road Warriors and the Varsity Club and Rick Steamboat and Ric Flair is coming up next week. So if you are a VIP member, you can listen to that each and every week, because we do an hour of each show each week on the Wayback Playback, Pat McNeil and I. It's a pretty fun show. We have a good time talking about it. It's a pretty amazing, this is a pretty historical show in the sense that, you know, Rick Steamboat and Ric Flair, some of the best matches of the 80s, you know, as far as, you know, what's well remembered. Rick Steamboat, Ric Flair considers him his best opponent. And, of course, you know, Flair, or Steamboat is best remembered for his matches with Flair and, of course, his WrestleMania 3 match with Rick Steamboat. Hey, if you want to get on the line, be sure to push 1 if you are listening right now, or you can call in live at 646-721-9828, 646-721-9828 here on Saturday Morning Wrestling, here on the PW Torch live cast. Also on this day in 1994, it was Super Brawl 4 held at the Albany Civic Center in Albany, Georgia. That's where Harlem Heat defeated Thunder and Lightning. Were those two big jacked-up guys, Thunder and Lightning? I think so. I think those big jacked-up guys from Florida. Jim Steele. Was Jungle Jim? God, he was in... Oh, that's right. He was in WCW. I totally forgot about that. He defeated the Equalizer, Dave Sullivan. Who, Dave Sullivan was here in Portland. God, so many guys came through Portland. Also, with that that show, Terry Taylor defeated Diamond Dallas Page. Johnny B. Badd defeated Jimmy Garvin. William Regal, Lord Steven Regal at the time, defeated Arn Anderson to hold on to the WCW tag title. Cactus Jack and Max Payne, a forgotten tag team there, defeated the Nasty Boys to retain the WCW title. Sting, Brian Pillman, and Dustin Rhodes defeated Steve Austin, Rick Rude, and Paul Orndorff in a Thunder Cage match. And then Ric Flair defeated Big Van Vader in a Thunder Cage with the Boss as the special guest referee, the Big Boss Man, to retain the WCW world title. So, yeah, February 20th, a lot of historical things have happened overnight. So, gosh, yeah, Dave Sullivan was here in Portland. I mentioned that Lance Von Erich, the famous, infamous Von Erich brother, he came up here and wrestled before he went to world class as Lance Von Erich, probably to get some experience. And, you know, he was a good-looking guy, and he won the Pacific Northwest title, and he was never great on interviews. And I remember, I think I saw him at a show at a high school. And, you know, this was probably 1985-ish. And so he's, you know, he's being introduced to the ring to defend his title against, I don't know, you know, Bobby Jaggers or the Grappler or the Assassin or who knows who, but he's the good guy. And I remember that he's, you know, standing there signing autographs in the ring, which is what good guys did at the time. And as he's standing there signing his autographs and everything, they introduce him. And, you know, from wherever they said he was from, you know, Ricky Vaughn. And some of the boys in the crowd started booing him. And he looked up in his autographs like, what the heck's going on here? What? And he just kind of shook his head and smiled, but it was like the first John Cena moment where the crowd was starting to turn on the good guys. Ricky Vaughn, Kevin Vaughn. I think that was his real name, Kevin Vaughn. And he was a fairly well-known high school athlete in the Lake Dallas area. And people knew that he wasn't a Von Erich. They knew that. But what are you going to do? And then Fritz had a falling out with Kevin Vaughn. And Fritz, I don't know what Fritz was thinking. He gets on TV and he just downgrades Ricky Vaughn. You know, Ricky Vaughn was never a Von Erich, and he was a liar, and he was this, and Ricky Vaughn was that, and what have you. And, you know, the fans the whole time really turned on Fritz because, you know, what Fritz wasn't acknowledging was that, you know, you're the one who said that Ricky Vaughn was a Von Erich. You're the one who lied to us. But that was just the Von Erich way. I remember in the dying days of Arsenio Hall, the talk show host, you know, he was popular for, I don't know, maybe a year or two. But he would have wrestlers and wrestling content on his show. And it might have been, was it Irv Mushnick? He had some wrestling writer on the show. And I remember this because it was just so shocking. But the wrestling writer goes, you know, by far the biggest scumbag in wrestling, and I think he called him a scumbag, he goes, the biggest scumbag in wrestling is Fritz Von Erich. And I was just like, well, he goes, yeah, you know, he uses the death of his sons to promote things. He's, you know, he mentioned the heart attack angle, and he mentioned the fake Von Erich and everything. I was just like, wow. It just blew my mind that the guy would be so stiff and so hard on Fritz Von Erich. I mean, he wasn't wrong. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't wrong, but it was true that the guy was a scumbag. But can you imagine being on, I don't know, I guess, maybe like Colbert, I guess, now, you know, like a second tier talk show, and just, you know, going off on just like a local, you know, a regional wrestling promoter. That was kind of shocking back at the back in the day. So 646-721-9828 is the number, 646-721-9828, if you want to call and talk about your favorite old-school wrestling topic. You know, a lot of this has to do with how things have changed, you know, the difference between now and then. And yeah, you know, you wouldn't get away as easily with having a, you know, like I said, Scott Hall is Razor Ramon, or, you know, fake Native Americans, or even, doing the stereotypical things. I mean, even today, if, say, Tatanka, Chris Chavis, who was, an actual Native American, you know, could he, you know, do the, you know, for his comeback, could he do the stereotypical, the traditional pro wrestling Indian war dance? Would that be insensitive today? Probably. Even if you are, I would think you can't do that. I would think, but I don't know. I don't know. It's just so, growing up, you probably thought, oh, I'm open-minded. I like all people. I like, you know, whatever race, creed, color, religion, background you are, you know, you get along with everybody. You think, gosh, I don't understand how things were so bad in the 50s or 60s and how things could be like that, because I am certainly open-minded. You probably, of course you think that, because you're a decent, honest, And then it's like you look back at your childhood just a few years ago and you go, oh, wow, I guess we had our faults too. I just never even realized that. I just was so insensitive to the whole thing. You know, it's like, yeah, Razor Ramon could not be done today, and who knows if Tatanka could even be done today, or any sort of stuff like Gold Dust. What about, Adrian Street? There's a YouTube video. If you watch a lot of the old Memphis stuff, you know, they make alliterations to things about, questioning people's sexuality, or even using some slurs and things. And, Bill Watts in Mid-South, you know, when he's feuding with Jim Cornette in the Midnight Express, called him a sissy. You're a sissy. It's just, just funny how times have changed. And I'm not saying it's not for the better. Don't get me wrong. I think that everyone should be able to live how they want and do what they want and just, you know, not be harassed as long as they're, you know, paying their taxes and treating everybody the same way. You know, there's no problem. Never even occurred to me that we were awful people back then. We were terrible, awful people. 646-721-9828 for the live cast today as we wrap things up here on the very popular Saturday Morning Wrestling. Hey, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have Mike Mooneyham on, who just retired from the Charleston Post and Courier. Longtime wrestling columnist. He's still doing his column. He's just not doing all the other sports stuff. But he'll be on the show. We'll talk Southern Wrestling, talk Mid-Atlantic. We'll talk he and Ric Flair, obviously, are really good friends. And we'll talk some Southern old-school wrestling. He's in the Mid-Atlantic Hall of Heroes. And we'll do that not next weekend, but probably the weekend after that. We'll do that. So that should be a good time. But, well, I'm going to head off to the very popular Comic-Con, the Wizard World. I mean, it's very funny how fandom is fandom. Whether you're a wrestling fan or a sports fan or anything, it's like you do the same rituals. People dress up. People know all the facts. They're very particular about history and knowing the facts. You know, The Simpsons make fun of that with Comic Book Guy. Worst episode ever. And, there really isn't much difference between fandoms other than just what you decide to watch. A lot of the rituals and everything are very much the same. All right, kids, Well, if you enjoyed the show, we'll be back next Saturday to talk some of your favorite old school wrestling. So remember, until next time, for Saturday Morning Wrestling, it's all a work.